Mohammed Ijaz. Import-export. I am so sorry to disturb your afternoon. I am totally lost. Would you permit use of your telephone? I stood aside to let him in. No doubt I smiled. Given what would ensue, I must suppose I did. Of course, if it's working today. I walked ahead and he followed, talking. An important deal. He had almost closed it. Visit to client in person necessary. Time, he worked up his sleeve and consulted a fake Rolex, time running out. He had the address. Again, he patted his pockets. But the office is not where it should be. He spoke into the telephone in rapid Arabic, fluent, aggressive, his eyebrows shooting up. Finally, shaking his head, he put down the receiver, looked at it in regret, then up at me with a sour smile. Weak mouth, I thought. Almost a handsome man, but not. Slim, sallow, easily thrown. "I am in your debt, madam," he said. "Now I must dash." I wanted to offer him a what? Bathroom break? Comfort stop? I had no idea how to phrase it. The absurd phrase, wash and brush up, came into my mind. But he was already heading for the door. Though from the way the call had concluded, I thought that they might not be so keen to see him at his destination as he was to see them. "This crazy city," he said. "They are always digging up the streets and moving them. I am so sorry to break in on your privacy." In the hall, he darted another glance around and up the stairs. "Only the British will ever help you." He skidded across the hall and prized open the outer door with its heavy ironwork screen, admitting for a moment the dull roar of traffic from Medina Road. The door swung back. He was gone. I closed the hall door discreetly and melted into the oppressive hush. The air conditioner rattled away like an old relative with a loose cough. The air was heavy with insecticide. Sometimes I sprayed it as I walked and it fell about me like bright mists, veils. I resumed my phrasebook and tape. Fifth lesson. I'm living in Jeddah. I'm busy today. God give you strength. When my husband came home in the afternoon, I told him, "A lost man was here, Pakistani, businessman. I let him in to phone." My husband was silent. The air conditioner hacked away. He walked into the shower, having evicted the cockroaches, walked out again, dripping, naked, lay on the bed, stared at the ceiling. Next day, I swept the business card into a bin. In the afternoon, the doorbell rang again. Ijaz had come back to apologise, to explain, to thank me for rescuing him. I made him some instant coffee and he sat down and told me about himself. It was then June 1983. I had been in Saudi Arabia for 6 months. My husband worked for a Toronto-based company of consulting geologists and had been seconded by them to the Ministry of Mineral Resources. Most of his colleagues were housed in family compounds of various sizes, but the single men and a childless couple like ourselves had to take what they could get. This was our second flat. The American bachelor, who had occupied it before, had been moved out in haste. Upstairs in this block of four flats lived a Saudi civil servant with his wife and baby. The fourth flat was empty. On the ground floor across the hall from us lived a Pakistani accountant who worked for a government minister, handling his personal finances. Meeting the womenfolk in the hall or on the stairs, one blacked out head to toe, one partly veiled, the bachelor had livened up their lives by calling, "Hello," or possibly, "Hi there." There was no suggestion of further impertinence, but a complaint had been made. And he vanished, and we went to live there instead. The flat was small by Saudi standards. It had beige carpet and off-white wallpaper on which there was a faint crinkled pattern, almost indiscernible. The windows were guarded by heavy wooden shutters that you cranked down by turning a handle on the inside. Even with the shutters up, it was dim,